Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The presidential campaign rolls on, and yesterday we looked in depth at the record of Rick Santorum with a Pennsylvania political watcher. On Monday, we'll talk about Ron Paul. Today, let's head to Utah and examine the political life of former Utah governor and ambassador to China, John Huntsman. Huntsman is probably trying to be the Santorum of New Hampshire, make a last-minute surge and vault into the top tier of 2012 GOP candidates that way. He got a little boost today from the Boston Globe, which endorsed him for the New Hampshire primary. Matthew Burbank is associate professor of political science at the University of Utah. Hello, Salt Lake City, from New York.
Hello.
And Thomas Burr is Washington Bureau reporter for the Salt Lake City Tribune. He's in New Hampshire right now on the road with John Huntsman. Hello to New Hampshire by way of Washington, by way of Salt Lake City.
Hey, Brian.
And Matt, here's a clip of John Huntsman from a debate last August.
This nation is hurting, it is scared, and it is bankrupt. We have a cancer growing in this country called debt, and we must deal realistically with it. We're about to hand down for the first time in the history of the greatest nation that ever was, the United States of America, to the next generation, less good, less productive, less competitive than the country we got. Barack Obama won in 2008 on hope. I'm going to win in 2012 on solutions. May God bless America. Thank you so very much.
So, Matt, as time ran out there and he stopped at the bell, is that the John Huntsman you've gotten to know there in Utah? Solutions
well,
guy?
He is certainly a solutions guy, but he is also somebody who in this campaign has raised his level of rhetoric, talking about things like the trust deficit or debt as a moral problem. Those are the kinds of things that he didn't really talk about as governor. He didn't have to talk about as governor, and they weren't the kind of issues in the state that would have resonated at that time.
He was extremely popular, I understand, as governor, having approval ratings of 80%, even 90% throughout his two terms. In 2008, he won re-election by a margin of 58%. That's not 58% of the vote. That's a margin of 58% over his opponent. Why so successful?
He was successful in part because he was able to bring to the table a kind of personality which people did not find objectionable, that he was easy to work with, that he was somebody who was clearly intelligent. He was very interested in having substantive discussions. And so he was able to, I think, please people who even disagreed with him in terms of the kind of substance of the way that he approached issues. So he was a governor who was able to work with very conservative legislators. He was a governor who was able to work with the minority Democrats. He was a governor who was able to work quite successfully with people who don't normally deal with government that much. And so I think he was able to establish that he was, you know, somebody that could be approached, that could be dealt with, and that indeed did try to find kind of common sense solutions.
Won't work on a bumper sticker, though. John Huntsman, a personality that people do not find objectionable. Thomas, Mitt Romney continually hammers away at his experience in the private sector. I know how to create jobs. But John Huntsman also had a successful business life, I gather. He was the CEO of the Huntsman Corporation, a global chemical company with over 12,000 employees. 2010 revenues were over $9 billion. Why don't we hear more talk of that from him on the campaign trail?
You know, he mentions on occasion, he likes to cite better his time as governor when Utah was named the best managed state, the best state for a business environment. He seems to think that one actually clicks a little more with voters to say, okay, yes, you have private experience, but I've also done it when I've been in leadership, which is what you want a president to do, because the president, running a giant corporation called the United States, he still has to lead from, some kind of, an actual executive experience in government. And that's what Huntsman talks about more.
And the tagline for the Huntsman Corporation is enriching lives through innovation. that's pretty boring, so maybe that's why he's not running on that. But it is a contrast with Romney, who tries to downplay his gubernatorial years and keeps saying, you know, I was Bain Capital Management and we started Staples and did all these things. Between 2005 and 2009, Utah had either the second highest or the fourth highest job growth in the country, depending on which measure you use, somewhere around 5.5 or 6% in terms of numbers of jobs created. Is there a particular industry or program, Thomas, that Governor Huntsman supported where he claims credit for fueling that job growth?
You know, one of them is high tech. He talks a lot about on the trail, especially, and what he did as governor was trying to kind of innovate and try to make this his incubator, better word for it, for high tech companies. He wanted to attract them to Utah, and he was pretty successful at that. Actually, he did really well at bringing in new companies and making the environment very friendly to those kind of companies. Utah is one of the highest per capita states for internet service, for example. And you know, it's one of those things that he actually was on the trail last week and handing out iPads at a school here in New Hampshire. The iPads were sponsored for all these elementary school students by a Utah company that was fostered because of some legislation that Huntsman promoted in Utah that allowed this kind of iSchool company to have charter schools across the country that would use a technology-based curriculum. Those are kind of things that he did. I'm sure Matt remembers as well, one of the first things Huntsman did when he became governor was walk into the Office of Economic Development and fire 33 workers and start over fresh. Mm-hmm. He wanted to clean house and start it from a different perspective. It was a little controversial at the time, but in the end, it obviously worked out.
Matt, did you want to add anything on Huntsman and jobs?
Again, I would add that one of the things he did try to do was, again, try to create a general business environment and worked very hard on reforming taxes as well, lowered the corporate, thinking about lowering the corporate tax rate and trying to lower the personal tax rates as well.
We're talking about John Huntsman with two Utah journalists. And as we did, folks, with Rick Santorum yesterday, this is your chance to call in and talk to people who have followed, in this case, the former governor of Utah closely during his political career and find out more about him. 212-433-WNYC. So anything you want to say or ask about John Huntsman, now's the time. And as with yesterday, this is not the time to call in and give your big speeches in support of him or in opposition to him. We're kind of gathering information from people who know John Huntsman well, which most of us don't. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can post your question to WNYC.org or our social media. We played a clip on the show yesterday of Rick Santorum from his semi-victory speech in Iowa, talking about his plan to unite America, and he's clearly targeting working-class voters. And here's Huntsman from a debate recently.
Let me just say that I want to be the president of the 99%. I also want to be the president of the 1%. When I hear out the people who were part of the Wall Street protest, I think, thank goodness we have the ability to speak out. I might not agree with everything they say. I don't like the anti-capitalism messages. But I do agree that this country is never again going to bail out corporations.
What do you think about that, Matt? Trying to unite the 1% and the 99%. He's sort of supporting and criticizing Occupy at the same time and willing to embrace Wall Street at the same time by implication.
Well, I think it's a good political strategy. It makes sense because certainly if you're running for president, you do want the 99% on your side because that's where the voters are. On the other hand, the reality is that you can't be anti-Wall Street, you can't be anti-business, you can't be anti-capitalism and get elected president in the United States. So I think that part of what he's doing here is trying to be a unifier. Whether, in fact, there could be any substance to that is a real question. I'm not sure exactly what you would do to try to bring those very different groups together.
I want to turn to Huntsman's time spent as ambassador to China. And again, though he's a Republican and has been a Republican governor, he accepted a job with the Obama administration as Obama's ambassador to China. And China has come up in a number of the debates. I think Mitt Romney has been particularly harsh, vilifying China, talks about we're in a trade war with China and things like that. Here's how Huntsman tends to respond, this from a November debate.
I mean, you can give applause lines and you can kind of pander here and there. You start a trade war if you start slapping tariffs randomly on Chinese products based upon currency manipulation. That's not a good idea.
So Thomas, obviously trying to paint himself as the guy who understands China, which is a real bogeyman among Republican voters, among Americans in general right now. Is that a political risk? Is this something he genuinely believes in? Is it working?
Well, with some voters it is. With some voters who say, look, this guy actually knows what he's talking about instead of just using those applause lines that some of the other candidates are using. I mean, Huntsman has, he's lived in China several times, last time as the actual ambassador beforehand as the executive of the Huntsman Corporation. He understands it very well, and he's trying to say, look, there's a little more nuance to a relationship between the United States and China than just to use one line saying we're in a trade war. And it certainly works with some. You know, I remember speaking with a senior White House official about, you know, his time there and whether he was, you know, good at what he was doing as the ambassador or whether he was just kind of a, you know, name-only ambassador, just a, you know, a placeholder kind of thing. And the White House said he was an effective ambassador, that it was a team effort, but that he did a really good job. I don't know if that works with Republican voters, you know, praise from the Obama White House, but they thought he did a good job.
Steve in Stamford, you're on WNYC with Matthew Burbank from the University of Utah Political Science Department and Thomas Burr, who's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Salt Lake City Tribune. Thanks for calling. Hi, Steve.
Thank you. Perfect segue to my question, which was, why would Huntsman, eyeing the White House in 2012, have accepted that ambassadorship? From what I've read, his biggest turnoff to the Republican primaries is that he somehow has an affiliation with the Obama people, and it's basically keeping him down in the polls, because that's all you have to say. He was once part of the Obama administration. Why did he accept that job to begin with?
Thomas Burr, want to take that?
Yeah, sure. You know, he has a few answers for that. One is that when the President of the United States calls you and asks you to serve your country, you serve your country. That this is a duty of every American to give back to their country. And then that's one of his reasons. If you want to look on the political side from, you know, people outside and looking in, it also kind of insulated Huntsman from having to deal with the rise of the Tea Party in many ways. You know, he got sent 10,000 miles away where he didn't have to, you know, make tough decisions, have to deal with, you know, voters who may not like what he was doing. He was kind of away from all of that stuff. So, yeah, he took a job at the Democratic administration, but he's trying to play that off as kind of like a military service or, serving your country. And he also was able to get away from tough decisions.
And, Matthew, it can't help that there's this note out there that was leaked as soon as he announced his candidacy. I'm sure you're familiar with this. Maybe our listeners haven't heard it. In August 2009, serving as ambassador to China, or I think as he was leaving, Huntsman wrote President Obama a handwritten note that says in part, quote, "You are a remarkable leader, and it has been a great honor getting to know you." Now, of course, the day that Huntsman announced his candidacy, this note leaked online. And Huntsman himself claims that the only people who ever saw the note were him and the president and their staffs. So the going theory is the Obama camp leaked it themselves to try and kill the Huntsman campaign before it got off the ground. Is that what you think?
It's very hard to tell. It's entirely possible that became public by other routes. And it also may be the case that the Obama people did leak it, but that the president didn't necessarily know about that. Because obviously if staff people are handling it, you know, they could have been the ones who did this without talking specifically to the president.
Right.
About
and
that.
In fact, Thomas, another theory is that someone within the Huntsman camp leaked it without Huntsman's knowledge, just to get it out in the public and get that news cycle done with so early, and then people wouldn't keep talking about it.
Sure. I you know, who knows for sure? No one's really saying. But if you look at it this way, that note coming out right now, right before the New Hampshire primary, would almost kill Huntsman's campaign. So you leak it as things start rolling, and people forget about it when it comes now.
When he's on the road, Thomas, since you're traveling with him in New Hampshire, does he talk more about his record as governor or his time in China?
He talks more about his record as governor, for sure. There's no question about that. He talks a lot about his family. He'll talk about what he did in Utah with cutting taxes or health care reform or economic development. He only talks about China necessarily when people ask about it, though he does talk about, you know, foreign policy and how he's lived overseas four times and he's served under four different presidents, and then he actually understands foreign policy more than just, you know, reading it out of a textbook.
Listeners, if you follow us on Twitter, We've just tweeted a copy of that note that he wrote to Obama. If you want to check out the Brian Lehrer Twitter feed. This just crossed the wires today. I wonder if either of you have seen this. I didn't know about it until this wire story. Republican presidential hopeful Ron Paul is being accused by the Huntsman camp of being out of line because of a web ad. This is a Paul web ad that uses images of Huntsman's adopted daughters to somehow argue that he doesn't hold American values. And the ad posted by New Hampshire Liberty for Paul includes video footage of Huntsman speaking Chinese to his now 12-year-old daughter, Gracie, as an infant. So in Concord, New Hampshire today, Huntsman called the ad stupid and said he objects to suggesting that there is something sinister in his decision to adopt Gracie and later another daughter from India. And, of course, he might speak Chinese. He was the ambassador to China. Thomas, is Gracie his daughter Chinese?
Yes, Gracie Mae was his adopted daughter from China, and Asha is adopted from India. And I actually wrote about this ad last night. It's not from the Ron Paul campaign. We should clarify. I've asked them for comment. I haven't heard back from the Paul campaign. But, you know, this sounds like from the YouTube video, looks like some supporter out there mashed together some images of Huntsman talking in Chinese with his Chinese daughter, with his Indian daughter. There's even one part of that where they superimpose Huntsman's face over Chairman Mao's, like, you know, him in his communist uniform thing at the end. The campaign calls it pretty offensive, and they're asking the Paul campaign to disavow it. But like I said, we haven't heard back from them yet.
Matthew, let me ask you a question about Huntsman's religion. He's Mormon, as is Mitt Romney. Is it part of what he talks about? And is there any different relationship that he has with his Mormonism or had publicly as governor of Utah? Any different public relationship to his Mormonism than Mitt Romney has?
Yes, certainly. I mean, in an important way, he represents a kind of different take on the Mormon religion. When he was running for governor, he didn't talk about it. He didn't need to talk about it. People knew that he was Mormon. Most politicians who elected here are. It wasn't anything that was really noteworthy. When he's running for president, that's an entirely different circumstance because many people don't know the Mormon religion or don't know very much about the Mormon religion. And so he was asked about that. He's been repeatedly asked about it. And what he's tried to do is really say, yes, I'm Mormon, but I have kind of a broader view of religiosity and spiritual values, and emphasizes the fact that he has adopted these two girls from China and from India, and wants to emphasize that they may have a religious views that they grow up with that are going to be different than my views as a Mormon. And so what he's tried to do in a way is put a little bit of distance between himself and kind of a standard Orthodox view of Mormonism, which Mitt Romney very much represents.
And one of the biggest news stories to come out of the Huntsman campaign was in August when he tweeted, quote, "To be clear, I believe in evolution and trust scientists on global warming. Call me crazy." So that was obviously a positioning statement to get him away from the creationist crowd and the global warming skeptics. And yet just last month he told the website Talking Points Memo that there are questions about the validity of the science. Quote, "I think the onus is on the scientific community to provide more in the way of information to help clarify the situation on global warming." So was this a flip-flop because his August tweet didn't help him in the Republican primaries? Thomas?
Yeah, possibly. When Huntsman was governor, he actually was about to join kind of a regional climate change cooperative, kind of a carbon market for a few states in the West. I don't think that actually came to fruition, but he obviously needed to make some point early on to try to get some attention, and his campaign was certainly trying to be the adult in the room in some ways compared to some of the other candidates who were kind of kowtowing to the Republican conservative base. But now maybe his campaign could be realizing that isn't working, as evident by the polls here in New Hampshire. So there's a point where maybe he's trying to step back a little bit and say, well, that's not all I'm saying. Take that period off. What I'm saying is that there's a little more science to look at here.
But Professor Burbank, before you go, Huntsman seems to be the Republican candidate who Democrats could fall in love with. But I've also heard people say, you know, the things that are getting out there in the media about Huntsman are how he embraces global warming, how he talks Chinese to his Chinese daughter, you know, the things that look liberal, but that he's really a very conservative guy in many ways. Would you say that's true?
Well, certainly he has a conservative record. He is, for example, very strongly pro-life. He always has been. He also, for example, signed an educational reform bill here that allowed for school vouchers that was extremely controversial. So he's done a number of things that would appeal very much to conservatives. However, you know, in the presidential contest, that's really not where he's positioned himself. And again, one of the reasons why he hasn't done as well in the polls is because he doesn't have that strong appeal across the board to social and economic conservatives.
So, Thomas, have you ever heard anyone from within the Huntsman camp question his decision to cede Iowa, to not campaign in Iowa and play all his chips in New Hampshire?
No, in fact, they're actually very proud of that. They're really glad they didn't have to deal with the ups and downs of the Iowa caucuses, and that you know, in looking at it from a money wise situation, they didn't have enough to compete there. So it was pick one or pick the other, and they decided on New Hampshire because things like abortion and you know, same sex marriage and stuff like that are not as a big of an issue up here in New Hampshire as they are in Iowa. And this, they thought that also number one, that independents can vote here in New Hampshire, and you know, even Democrats who are not aligned with the Democratic Party necessarily can vote here in New Hampshire, that maybe this would be a better state for
right.
him.
That particular thing was also true in Iowa, but I hear all those other differences. 30 seconds left. This Boston Globe endorsement today of Huntsman for the New Hampshire primary. Any political impact? Thomas, really quick.
Yeah, I mean, Huntsman last night said he welcomes any endorsement from independents, Democrats, Republicans, anyone out there. So he's happy for it.
Matthew Burbank, same question.
It may help slightly, but I think more than anything else, it's targeted at Mitt Romney. The fact that he didn't get that endorsement, I think, is the bigger story.
Next week's follow-up segment, who has the best hair, Romney, Huntsman, or Santorum? But for now, we'll just have to live with looking at his record. Matthew Burbank, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Utah. Thomas Burr, Washington Bureau Reporter for the Salt Lake City Tribune, covering candidate Huntsman in New Hampshire right now. Thank you so much, both of you. This has been extremely informative and fun.
Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a follow-up Friday segment on for-profit schools in our area. When are they a good deal? When are they just predators? Why has the New York City Consumer Affairs Commissioner, who's about to come in as our guest, launched a subway advertising campaign against some of the for-profit schools in the city? Stay with us.